Here's your Stoke FM news for Tuesday, January 31st, 2023. I'm Megan Dooling. Starting today in BC, people carrying a cumulative total of as much as 2.5 grams of opioids, cocaine, methamphetamine, and MDMA for personal use will no longer be arrested, charged, or have their drugs taken away. Instead, police will point drug users to treatment or mental health and addiction resources. Jennifer Whiteside is BC's Minister of Mental Health and Addiction.
Instead of being treated as criminals, they will be treated with care and compassion. Decriminalizing people who use drugs is a critical step in tackling the toxic drug crisis. It will help break down stigma, the fear and shame around substance use that prevents so many people from reaching out for life-saving supports. Because substance use is a public health matter, not a criminal justice one.
This decriminalization is possible because the federal government granted BC an exemption to one section of the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act. It's a pilot project that will end on January 31st, 2026. BC declared a public health crisis in 2016 because of the rate at which people were dying from using toxic drugs. In 2001, 2,306 people died accidentally from toxic drugs. That's the highest number of deaths from drugs per year in the province. Earlier this week, the BC Coroner's Service reported that 2,272 people died in 2022 from toxic drugs. That's 34 less than 2001. The idea with the decriminalization is to save lives. Dr. Bonnie Henry is BC's chief public health officer. She says removing drug users from the criminal justice system will help reduce the shame and stigma around addictions. Dr. Scott Wilson is the lead doctor at the Providence Crosstown Clinic in Vancouver. He says this decriminalization pilot project will improve lives.
I believe decriminalization will amount to a sea change in the public health approach to drug policy and to the care of individuals, people who use drugs.
Erin McLaughlin is the co-director of community outreach and development at Revelstoke Community Connections. Stoke FM spoke with her about decriminalizing drug users back when the exemption was announced at the end of May. Here's that conversation again. So to start, I'll get you to introduce yourself, say who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Erin McLaughlin. I'm the co-director of community outreach and development at Community Connections.
And we're here today because for the first time in the country, a small amount of formerly illicit drugs are now decriminalized in British Columbia. What were your first impressions when you heard that this was happening?
For me, it's a win, absolutely. I think decriminalization of substances is a really important step towards protecting people that are dying from drug toxicity. And so, yeah, it's a good first step. I think we have a long way to go because I believe that a safe supply would be the ultimate goal. But right now, decriminalizing possession of, I think it's 2.5 grams of illicit substances is a great first step.
And that's cumulative. So you could have a little bit of cocaine and a little bit of methamphetamine, but that has to equal 2.5 grams. When you say stuff like safe supply is the ultimate goal, can you describe for us what that means?
Absolutely. So I guess when I think of harm reduction, I think of it as not only sort of daily practices, but as a theory. And so harm reduction believes that people that are ingesting substances should be able to do so safely. So having a safe supply of heroin or cocaine for people that are actively using those substances would prevent them from dying.
And what is a safe supply?
So a safe supply would be medically tested substances that are administered by a physician in a safe dosage, so that a person that is requiring the substances because of their body's physical addiction to them would allow them to do so safely and carry on with their lives.
And of course, this announcement happened on Wednesday, and we've been hearing a lot in national and provincial media about different arguments about people not wanting it because they say it'll maybe encourage their children, or how do they explain to their children that this is okay, or, you know, people using drugs shouldn't, you're saying it's okay for people using drugs to have it. And then other people on the other side of the coin, you're hearing 2.5 grams isn't enough and people will have to keep on going. And like you said, it's still poison, toxic drugs. So talk to us a little about why this in your mind is still a win.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's one step in, I think, a direction towards harm reduction as an overarching theory of how to support people that are using substances. Is 2.5 enough? Who knows? Maybe yes, maybe no. Is decriminalization the only thing that needs to be done? No. Will it probably increase the number of people buying street drugs? Probably. That's not great. And that's why I think that a safe supply moves towards a safer community approach. But, you know, I think there's a lot of things that need to be done and we can only go one step at a time. And if this is the first step, then that's great.
And in my mind, maybe this normalizes and opens up that conversation about why it's necessary to allow this. Do you just maybe allowing for a cultural shift? Do you see that?
Absolutely. So the other side of harm reduction is like destigmatizing. So I think the idea that certain substances have been criminalized, so heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, those have been criminalized. We've decided that those substances are things that people should go to jail for possessing or using, whereas alcohol is regulated and recently cannabis has been regulated. So, you know, I think that that's kind of the mental shift that needs to happen a little bit. We all use substances. Lots of us drink coffee and use caffeine to get through our day. I know I've had 3 coffees already, but that's where it is. It's, to me, it's about public safety. It's about how do we keep our communities safe and prevent people from dying.
And give us a 2.5 grams, somebody who uses, how quickly do they go through that amount of drugs?
That part I'm not 100% sure on, because I think it would just depend on people's tolerance and usage habits. So, yeah.
And how relevant is this to Revelstoke? Is this going to change things for people here?
I don't think it will be relevant in Revelstoke because it's not something that is going to be really visible here. I can imagine it being more visible in an urban center. It's also not coming into effect until January 31st, 2023. So we've got a ways to go, which is in preparation for RCMP and other governing agencies to be able to catch up with what that policy change means. But I think what ultimately, like I said, it's a step in the right direction. How do we get to a point where we're looking at substance use as something that people do and as part of our society and just about keeping people safe?
And I wanted to get a little bit of context for you locally. We know that there is an opioid crisis in the province. A lot of people have died from overdoses. It's very common, and it's not a certain person who dies across society, cross demographic. People are dying. How big of a problem is that here in town?
Revelstoke was actually one of the top cities that had deaths from drug toxicity. Based on our population size, we had quite a few deaths from drug toxicity. And myself, in my work, I had 6 clients pass away. It's really difficult. It's difficult to know and to watch. People using substances are using them. It's not used in isolation. It's in a response to something, in my experience of what I've seen. And so figuring out how to be a community that supports the people that are hurting or people that are struggling with their substance use and want to make those changes, I would like to be part of that.
And talk about how this move to decriminalize those substances that are often toxic can help in that, in supporting these people as a community.
Well, moving away from a toxic drug supply means that they don't die before they get the help that maybe they want or have the opportunity to make changes in their life that would allow them to lead their preferred life. And to me, that's always the ultimate goal. Is it's we all have choice of how we want to live our life and what that looks like. And we also all have a dream of what we want our life to look like. And so how do you get to that place? And for some people, using substances is going to be part of their life forever. I'm going to drink coffee forever. I'm not going to lie. But using substances forever doesn't mean that you can't also be a homeowner. Doesn't mean that you can't also have kids if you want to have kids. Like, there's so many things that stop being an option for somebody if they choose to use substances, and I don't think that needs to be mutually exclusive.
When I first came in the building, you were talking about how this is a safe space for people to use because, oh, it's not, sorry, can you say what you told me?
Yeah, absolutely. So our building is not we're not a safe injection site, but we're a harm reduction site. So we have naloxone kits on site and we have harm reduction supplies. So we always have safe inhalation kits or injection kits that people can come and get those if they need supplies to use their substances. And we also have naloxone kits, and naloxone is a substance that can help to reverse overdose. So if somebody is overdosing because of their use of opiates, naloxone is something that can be administered to stop that from happening.
Is there a safe place in town for people to use?
We do not have a safe injection site. And so that's another thing that would be amazing. I think a safe injection site is something that would have to be part of Interior Health and be governed by people that can operate a facility like that. I know there are other places in the interior. I know Anchors is a organization that really supports harm reduction, and I believe they have facilities like at Shambhala at music festivals where they do drug checking. And so there's so many different ways that people are really working towards a harm reduction model, which I fully support. So whatever's next for Revelstoke, I'm not sure, but a safe injection site would be great.
I think this is safe supply. Correct. There's so many terms, so just correct me if I have this wrong, but how come it's not possible for somebody to buy some drugs and then go and test to make sure it's not toxic?
They can do that. That's usually part of a safe injection site, is that there's also the ability to test your drugs. Testing drugs is tricky, and to have the correct testing facility and supplies is important. There are some small, like, at-home drug testing kits, but they're really difficult to use and not very accurate.
And just talk to us, for people listening, what kind of drugs do you see people using that could be toxic?
They're all drugs. Cocaine, heroin, opiates of all sorts. Lots of opiates are now being mixed with benzos, which is troublesome because they have a similar effect, but benzos are not responsive to naloxone, so that overdose can be lethal. And fentanyl is in everything. And it's a really, really strong opiate, and that is primarily the toxicity that kills people.
And just talk to us briefly. I know this conversation has been had over and over, but it doesn't hurt to repeat it. What is behind, you said 6 people died in your experience, and I'm really sorry to hear that. And thank you for carrying that for the community too. But what is behind the raise in toxicity and people dying?
That's a good question. I'm not 100% sure that that is something that we can, I'm not sure that that's something that, I don't know if Revelstoke is a good reflection of that. I don't know. All I know is that I know that fentanyl has become increasingly prevalent and carfentanil, which are really, really strong opiates that are becoming more present in drugs, and that toxicity is what's making it so harmful.
Are you saying that Revelstoke is different from other places, so you can't really say what's behind it here?
Yeah, I guess I think, like, it's something that would be better for somebody that maybe has been in the harm reduction field longer, because they would understand maybe the increase in why fentanyl is so much more prevalent. And to me, I always think too of like rural versus urban. And so urban centers maybe have a better understanding of why this is happening. Why, ultimately, I guess I think when something is unregulated, so there's substances that are unregulated, there's no way for anyone to know whether they're safe. And when there's, you know, things have been mixed with cannabis and cannabis has been mixed in with fentanyl, I've heard in the past. And so, you know, it's when something is just bought off the street, we have no idea what's in it.
How long have you been working in with Community Connections?
I've been working here for 13 years.
Okay, wow. Wow, yeah, okay. That's so interesting. And I guess, like you mentioned, this comes into effect 2023, and you said it's going to take a while for it to take effect, but for people listening, what do they need to know, if anything, about how this is going to change how things look or how they interface with things or interact with things?
I hope that people can maintain curiosity. I think there's a lot of fear around substance use, and I'm always happy to have conversations with people that want to understand harm reduction. I know the Minister of Public Health, or of the Mental Health and Addictions more specifically, was talking about how decriminalization of substances is related to a public health issue, because using substances is not a criminal issue. And so to move away from the idea that somebody is a bad person because they use substances is a huge part of harm reduction, and I'm always happy to talk about that.
What do you, in from your perspective, what could Revelstoke use in terms of, as you were talking about, providing that community support for people who have dependencies on drugs? What are our shortfalls here?
So social determinants of health, I believe, are a big area where I see Community Connections having the ability to support our community. So particularly our outreach services, which are geared towards connecting people to social welfare. So income support, rental support, subsidized housing, connecting people to counseling, connecting people to adult mental health, connecting people to settlement services, connecting people to doctors, any possible way that I can remove barriers to support people to get to their preferred lives.
And what makes it hard for you to do that now?
Funding. always funding. So Community Connections is a nonprofit, and the outreach department specifically is purely run on grants and funding. So right now I have a Columbia Basin Trust funding to support harm reduction work, which I'm really grateful for. But I know that in next year I don't have that. And so I have to keep making moves to figure out how to get more funding for our operations.
And we've been hearing that you have, and you just showed me your new kitchens, commercial kitchens here, which organizations can rent out to prepare food. Will that help you with your funding?
Yeah, so the commercial kitchen is the neighborhood kitchen is meant to be a place for local food entrepreneurs to rent space, and the rental income will help us operate the kitchen and produce food that we can use in the food bank. And again, food access to food and food security is another part of our outreach department, which supports people that are experiencing poverty and have a reduced access to food. And so having being able to come here and get a bag of groceries and talk to someone and maybe get harm reduction supplies and see somebody about disability assistance, that all happens here and connects people to just social welfare support so that they can live their preferred lives, like I said. Yeah.
You can tell just from the conversation that we're having that it is such a rounded thing. It's not simple and straightforward, and it's all connected. I don't have any more questions, I don't think. It depends on what else you say, but do you have anything else that you want to add?
Just that we always appreciate donations. Right now we have a Fill the Ban food drive happening. So if people are interested in donating food, please come to 416 Second Street West on Friday, June 3rd and fill the ban with food or monetary donations. Our website also can direct you towards how to become a monthly donor. And if you would like to support the outreach services specifically, you can also request to support money towards paying for people's medications, paying for people's housing, their rentals, their hydro bill, their TELUS bill, whatever ways that we can support people to stay indoors and stay in a life that's safe. We would like to try to do that. So all donations are appreciated.
And for people listening who might feel disconnected from this, who maybe don't access the food bank, who aren't addicted to substances that can be toxic, why is it important? And I think it has to do with what you were saying, is the community bolstering each other. But why is it important for people to be aware and to be involved and to be connected with these things?
I think it's really easy to categorize people and label them in a specific way. And so I just would love to encourage anybody that has questions or emotional reactions to issues like decriminalization to ask questions, to get curious, to talk to people. And I'm always happy to do that. And because I think that the closer that we get to people, the more we can recognize our shared humanity. And I would like to live in a world where we support each other in our communities.
And you would just think that maybe we don't realize it, but what it could do for the community if there was more of that support for people, I don't even think we can imagine how different that would be.
Yeah, ultimately, I think of social work as something that in a perfect world would be unnecessary. So I would love to work myself out of a job. Right now I'm very busy, and so that's telling. I would love to have 10 of me right now to be able to do, like you just said, have a community where everyone's supported.